Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going
to
find one.
Are you confused with the ups and downs in the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. They're real clients. They're banking clients. Are trying to get rid of stuff.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Am I on the air? I apologize to anybody listening.
On right now. The person that does the show isn't there, and okay. So I am on the air. People can hear me? Is that, type yes if I'm coming through. All right, anyway, I apologize. This is Peter Schiff at Euro Pacific Capital. I am the host of the show Wall Street Unspun, which is on shortwave radio every Wednesday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific time. The show can also be heard on the shortwave. 5.07 megahertz is the frequency, and you know, simulcast on europac.net. Well, a couple of upcoming announcements. You know, notice I haven't really kept pace with my scheduled appearances section on the website, and so it's kind of dated right now. It doesn't have any upcoming appearances. The most recent one coming up is the investment conference in New Orleans, which I would certainly encourage people to be going to. I'll be sending out an email on that shortly, but it's a New Orleans conference, and I believe it is towards the end of October. And you know, there should be something up on my website about that conference shortly. I think I have a workshop and a presentation I'll be doing there. I won't have a booth. I won't be exhibiting. Last year I actually had a booth there, but this year I'm just going to be a speaker. But it's always a good conference, and there's always a lot of other people, speakers who are worth listening to in addition to myself. So if you want to come, and it's also a good way to meet me in person, I will be at the New Orleans Investment Conference in New Orleans in October, and there should be something in the email coming out about that in a couple of weeks. And also there should be something on my website. It's not up there yet under my scheduled appearances section on my site. Also, I am going to be on a show on CNN this Saturday. It's a show about housing, so it should be very interesting. Let me get the name of the show. Is got it written down here somewhere? Where is it? My computer's freezing up on me. Open House is the name of the show. And it's going to be on CNN, I think, 9:30 a.m. and 3:30 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday. So I guess they're going to... And also they repeat it on Headline News. So Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. Oh, no, I think it's CNN at 9:30 a.m. And then I think at 3:30 p.m., is on Saturdays and Sundays on Headline News. So there'll be a few opportunities to catch it. But I know for sure it's on Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. I'm not sure if it's 9:30 a.m. Pacific time as well or if it's on 6:30 a.m. But if you check the schedule, the host of the show is Jerry Willis on CNN. And it's called Open House. I don't know. I do know I'm scheduled to be on CNBC again sometime next week. I forget, you know, I can't remember the date. I think it's Thursday. I think it's a week from tomorrow or Wednesday that I'm going to be on. But I'm going to post that up on my website shortly. I forget the date. They scheduled that one way in advance. But those are the only two shows that I know about. But anyway, just a couple things before I go to the phones, because I've got four people on hold already, and I know I haven't even given out the phone number yet, so I know there's some anxious callers. But the number to call if you want to ask a question is 888-678-9797. 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. And as always, I invite calls and comments. Again, you know, a lot of volatility in the market. The Dow was down almost 300 yesterday. It was up over 250 today. The NASDAQ, you know, was down 60 yesterday, up more than 60 today. You know, a lot of volatility, you know, came out. More bad news, of course, has been coming out about, you know, the mortgage lenders, about the brokerage firms. We had some downgrades now from some of the big brokerage houses, downgraded Lehman Brothers and downgraded Bear Stearns and some of the other investment banks. And, of course, you know, if anybody saw me on Fox TV, was it 2 weeks ago, when everybody was recommending the financials, and I came out and I said, this is nuts. They're taking time bombs, and Ben Stein, you know, went off on me. You know, and I said, well, come on, Ben. I said, these companies don't have any earnings. And he says, oh, look at all these earnings. And I tried to point out that these earnings are in the rearview mirror, that those are trailing earnings, that in the future the earnings were going to look nothing like what they looked in the past. Because the only reason these brokerage houses were able to make all that money was because they were able to package up these mortgage products and sell them at a huge profit, and because there was a lot of, you know, cheap and easy access to credit. I said a lot of what helped these financials make money, it's all gone. And these guys can't figure it out. But I guess some of the Wall Street analysts figured out that, you know, they have to downgrade these stocks because their earnings are not going to be there. And, of course, the earnings are going to be far less than what people are forecasting. And I think, personally, that the big brokerage houses are actually going to lose money. Right, it's just going to be just like Cisco and just like Lucent and Nortel. They posted huge losses after the bursting of the dot-com bubble, and the stocks collapsed. They went down like 80%, 90%. You know, they've been recovering over the past few years, but they get clobbered because all these earnings estimates were phony, and all the rosy earnings estimates for the financials are phony. Just like all the earnings estimates for the home builders were phony. Remember, a year ago, all these home builders were trading at 6 and 7 times earnings, and everybody thought they were cheap. Well, now the stocks have dropped 80%, and of course they have no earnings. They're trading, you know, they all have losses. So those earnings were fantasies, and so Wall Street is starting to come to grips only a little bit that they have to reduce their earnings expectations for the financials, which of course represent the lion's share of the S&P 500 earnings. But also you had the Fed minutes came out, and the interesting thing about the Fed minutes was that they basically don't see that there's any problems in the economy. I mean, basically their statement was that they said that the most likely scenario is that growth continues, but at a little bit more moderate of a pace, that everything that's happening in the mortgage market and the housing market will somewhat slow the growth of our economy, but that the economy is fine and is going to continue to grow. I mean, just talk about it, how absolutely ridiculous and how nonsensical such a statement is, which is why I believe that it's a deliberate lie on the part of the Fed. Because, again, I've said that the Fed cannot tell the truth. The truth is the economy is headed for a recession, but they can't admit that. Because the minute they admit that they think the economy isn't going for a recession, now the thing is, okay, the economy is headed for a recession. Where's the rate cut? We need a rate cut. But they can't say, I'm sorry, we can't cut rates because the dollar will collapse and inflation will get worse. They can't say that because that would expose them. And so they have to keep lying and pretending everything is fine to justify their failure to reduce interest rates. And it's one of the more interesting quotes. I'm going to write my commentary about it. Is I saw Larry Kudlow, of all people, you know, was screaming at, you know, that Ben Bernanke doesn't get it, that he blew it, that he can't read the writing on the walls, that he should be substantially slashing the Fed funds rate. And I couldn't even believe what I was listening to. I mean, Larry Kudlow, how he of all people shouldn't be able to accuse anybody of failing to read the writing on the walls. I mean, he's the poster boy for failing to read the writing. Every time he does his show, all he talks about is the Goldilocks economy. How could we have had a Goldilocks economy if the thing fell apart so quickly? And if we really have a Goldilocks economy, why does the Federal Reserve need to rescue it with massive rate cuts when interest rates are already negative when adjusted for the actual rate of inflation? I mean, if we have such a great economy, why does it need to be artificially pumped up by the government? I mean, this is ridiculous. But anyway, let me quickly take some of the callers who've been holding on. Let me take first Chuck calling from Denver. Go ahead, Chuck. All right, I have no idea what's going on here. And I am. Believe me, I am extremely, extremely upset at the unprofessional and poor manner in which this show is being handled. And I need to take some action. You know, I really need to deal with find a way around the problems I've been having with the people who have been doing this radio show for me. And I really wanted to apologize. It's one of the more unprofessional things that I've done. And believe I have a lot of things to do. I have a lot on my plate. I haven't had the opportunity to try to find a more professional method of delivering this radio program. But believe me, I need to escalate that. I need to find a more efficient, more professional manner to deliver these radio shows. Because the people who are doing it now are just not doing a good job. Anyway, I know I have callers on the line. I have no idea if I can take any of the calls. So I would encourage people who are on hold to continue to be on hold, and I will...
You sound good now. Can you hear me?
Hello? Who's...
Can you hear me?
Yes, who's talking?
This is Chuck, the first caller, I suppose.
Oh, hey, Chuck. All right, well, you're there. Okay, go ahead, ask your...
Great, now, who's this? Is this Peter?
Yeah, but I can... Please don't... You're coming in so loudly that when you talk, I can't... It's almost breaking my eardrum.
All right, I will talk softer for you.
Hello?
Better? Yeah, is that better?
I'm holding the phone away from my ear, but go ahead, ask your question.
Okay. First of all, I agree with about 80% of what you say. I think you perform a great service. Second of all, I have not bought your book, okay, yet. I looked at it in the store, and I didn't buy it. And third, I'm not with your company yet. If I did, I would go with Bruce, and it'll be a little later in my life that I do that. Okay?
Well, do you have a question?
Yeah, I have three questions. First of all, on the Canadian Royalty Trust, I just went to an oil conference in Denver, and I talked to a guy there, a Canadian, who just lost $500,000, and I lost about $12,000 myself. And I believe that those companies are not geared for growth the way a normal E&P is. And I think what will happen in the long run, you may get your interest for a while, but the principal amount is going to go down. And I'm going to give you my second thing, and then my third, and then you can go ahead. I believe there's going to be a Hillary factor, and I think it may be a good idea to get, for instance, E&P stuff up into Canada or in terms of our investing, because I think our local companies are going to get taxed to death. And the last thing is I got a question for you about naming investments. Cramer does it. They do it on the Nightly Business Report. You say you can't do it because you don't know our backgrounds. I'm wondering what the difference is between what Cramer does.
All right, let me go from the beginning. First of all, on the energy trust, when people say they've lost money on them, I guess they're talking about the fact that the prices have come down for the trust. That doesn't mean that people have lost money. It just means that if they go to sell their trust right now, they don't get as much money as they would have got had they sold them in the past. I still think that ultimately the dividends are not affected, and yes, of course, these trusts eventually will all go to zero. The question is, how much income do they pay out between now and then, and what kind of return can you expect to get? And given my outlook for the price of oil and natural gas over the life of most of these trusts, I think they're very good buys. Certainly, the fact that the Canadian government has proposed increasing the taxes, that is a real loss, because the income that we get is not going to be as great if we have to share more of it with the Canadian government. But I still recommend these trusts, and you know I'm selective in the ones that I buy. But I think they're good investments. I agree that taxes in the United States could very well go up. But the main reason that I think that we need to invest abroad is because the dollar is certain to go down. And so anybody who wants to make investments, you want to denominate those investments in the currencies against which the dollar is going to lose value. You know, there's no question it's going to go down, and you know, Canada is one of the currencies that I like. But I also want to make sure I have a lot of money in Europe, in Asia, in other economies, in other currencies, especially those that have that are not as affected by weakness in the U.S. economy. You know, and your last question as to why I can't give out specific investment advice, and Cramer can. Cramer's not a stockbroker, so Cramer is. He can pretty much say whatever he wants and hide behind the First Amendment. Not necessarily hide behind it, but he's protected by the First Amendment. They've got some ethical things that they have to do as far as CNBC and things of that nature, but CNBC is not regulated by the NASD like I am. I am a licensed stockbroker, and therefore I have to abide by NASD rules and regulations. And the NASD is what says that I cannot make a recommendation without first knowing whether the recommendation is suitable for the person who I'm giving it to. There's no such requirement for Cramer. Cramer can say whatever he wants. He just needs to be honest, so he can't pump and dump. So he can't say, hey, buy this stock, but then, you know, be selling it quietly behind the scenes. I mean, that's kind of fraud. So he's bound by those type of ethical standards. But he can recommend anything he wants. And, you know, and people, if somebody buys something based on his recommendation, you know, he's not a licensed stockbroker. So there's no recourse. And he is, and there's no standard that he's held to. Anyway, thank you for the questions. And let me skip over to Steve calling from California. Go ahead, Steve.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Hi, I'm back. First, again, I want to apologize again for the complete incompetence of the people handling the show. I don't necessarily blame the person who's here tonight. I blame the person who took a vacation and left somebody in charge who doesn't know anything about how to handle anything. So the person who normally does the show, who I will try to give a fire and replace as soon as I can, that individual took a vacation and put somebody in charge of the show without showing them how to do anything. So basically, I need to suspend all calls for the rest of the night because the person who's handling the show doesn't know how to connect them through. So I know there are probably some people hanging on and have questions. If they're important questions, maybe you can email them to me, and I'll try my best to answer them for you. If not, maybe you can wait around until next week. Also, one thing I would suggest, if anybody who's listening to this show knows anybody who I can go and get in touch with to pick up my radio show, here's what I need to do. I need a company that can handle the show. Basically, I do it from my telephone, and I need somebody to put it out on shortwave and put it on my website. I just do it once a week. And, you know, maybe there's an organization out there that can do it without all the many problems that we've had over the year. People have complained that they can't hear it. There's bad quality. There's bad sound quality. The people don't post them in time, so they don't make it to my – sometimes they don't make it for days or a week onto my archives. And it's all because none of it is me. I mean, I'm not doing it. I have another company who I've hired to do it. And they just don't do a very good job. And I just have been so busy with so many other things that I haven't made it a priority to change the provider of the service. And I know I need to do it. And, you know, tonight is just another example of why I definitely need to do that. Anyway, let me just try to, you know, make this a monologue for the rest of the show. And, again, I apologize for the fact that nobody can call. And I'm assuming that I'm still on the air. And I'd like the person who's IMing me to at least send me an IM message every couple of minutes so I know that I'm still talking to an audience, because I really have no idea whether anybody is actually there. So if you can just keep, like, you know, sending me a little note, like, I'm on, so I know that I can keep talking. Am I on? Well, I have no idea. I'm not getting any kind of notation. I'm going to send him a message then, because he's obviously not listening to what I'm saying. Let's see. Okay, I'm on. Anyway, you know, I've noticed recently, you know, with the market volatility, a number of clients, and obviously it's the percentage is relatively small based on the number of clients we have, but, you know, more than a normal number, have been very nervous, and a number of people have chosen, despite, you know, my advice, to sell their stocks and go to cash. Of course, very few people wanted to do that a month ago. So the biggest mistake, of course, is watching the value of your holdings drop 10 or 15% and then deciding to go to cash. I mean, that makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. But a number of people have done that. And, you know, I think it is an incredible mistake, and most likely those people, you know, will suffer substantially as a result, either because they end up buying these stocks back at substantially higher prices, or they don't buy them back at all and end up broke. Because, you know, in my opinion, the riskiest asset that you can hold is U.S. dollars. I mean, if somebody basically told me that I had to hold all my money in the Dow Jones or CD or money market, as bearish as I am on stocks, I would rather own stocks. I'd rather own the NASDAQ than the U.S. dollar. There is very little that I'd rather own. I mean, I might even rather own a condo in Florida than the U.S. dollar. That's how risky the U.S. dollar is. Because as overpriced as condos in Florida are, they're always going to have some value. I mean, it's worth something, right? I mean, you still have, I mean, even if they fall by 80%, I mean, they still have some value. There's real material there. There's a building there, you know. There's stuff there. Who knows if the dollar is going to have any value by the time this whole thing is over. So anybody who is nervous about the market and as a result wants to go to cash, they're making a gigantic mistake, and they are jumping. If they're jumping out of the frying pan, which they're certainly not in with my stocks, but if they were jumping out of the frying pan, they're going head first right into the fire. So if anybody is nervous and thinks they want to be in cash, at absolute minimum, the cash needs to be foreign currencies. Under no circumstances should anybody consider going to U.S. dollars. And another thing that you can go to other than cash would be gold bullion. You know, I think gold bullion in many cases is better than owning euros or Swiss francs. I mean, if you don't want to be in stocks for whatever reason, if you don't want to be in foreign stocks, the fallback position should be I want to be in gold bullion. And if you look at what's happened during this recent decline, the price of gold has not gone down at all. So gold stocks have lost value. But if you look at where the price of gold is and where the price of gold was a month ago, it's really much pretty much held up. And so if you're worried about the volatility and you're going to make the mistake of selling your stocks, at least do the right thing with the proceeds. Buy gold bullion. If you're not going to do that, maybe buy, you know, foreign currencies, short-term government bonds. But under no circumstances should you sell foreign stocks and leave the money in U.S. dollars. I mean, that's the worst possible thing you can do. And, you know, some people are worried because they still haven't gotten it out of their head that you can't measure your stock portfolio or your brokerage account in dollars. Just don't even think about what your positions are worth in dollars. Don't worry. Oh, gee, my statement was $1 million last month, and now this month it's $900,000. Oh, no, I've lost $100,000. That's not the way to look at it. It doesn't matter what the dollar value of your account is, because ultimately it's the dollar itself that's going to collapse, and it's not going to matter. Right? So if temporarily the account is worth fewer dollars, what difference does it make? Because in the final analysis, the account could be worth millions of dollars or billions of dollars. Who knows? Who knows? What you need to think about is what's in my account. Well, last month I had 1,000 shares of this REIT. I had 1,000 shares of that utility. I had 1,000 shares of this pipeline. I had 1,000 shares of that refinery. And you know what? All those shares are still there. Nothing has changed. No real value has been lost, despite what the statement says, because all the statement says is applies a U.S. dollar price to the portfolio where it liquidated at that time. Who cares what the U.S. dollar price is if we liquidate it? We're not going to liquidate it. And it doesn't matter what the U.S. dollar price is, because we know ultimately the U.S. dollar is going to collapse. So who cares? Who cares? The reason we have these portfolios is because we want out of the dollar. So don't use the dollar as a frame of reference, because it's flawed. It doesn't matter. Yeah, sure, temporarily, dollars have gained value relative to stocks, because I guess very overly leveraged investors have been forced to buy dollars and to sell assets. And so that's temporarily propped up their value. But it doesn't do anything to change the long-term perspective. So I would just not even worry about it. I personally think, who knows, we might have seen the lows already. I mean, I don't want to say for sure, but a lot of the stocks that we own that had big drops, a lot of those stocks have recovered. Some have actually made new 52-week highs. There are a few stocks in our portfolios that have hit new highs. Most of them haven't hit new highs in U.S. dollars, but they've hit new highs in local currencies. A couple have made new highs in dollars. But even the ones that haven't made new highs, they are substantially below their lows of a week or two ago. So anybody who happened to, you know, average down on some of these stocks or buy into the dips, because of course many people still have considerable gains in these stocks that bought them years ago, but people who added to their positions or averaged down if they just established positions with me recently, certainly have benefited from the fact that they were able to catch some very, very good prices. But many of the stocks, of course, have yet to recover. They've recovered some, but they're not all the way back to where they were. And, of course, some of the currencies, particularly the Australian and New Zealand dollars, are way below where they were at their peaks a month ago. And so I don't think that those peaks represent the tops of the bull markets for those currencies. I believe that they will be making new highs. And so I think it is a good opportunity to add to these positions still before those currencies do make new highs. Just remember, the problems that we are experiencing or that the global markets are experiencing all have their roots in the United States. But just because there's a temporary spillover doesn't mean that's a permanent situation. That's the mistake that a lot of people are jumping to. They're seeing that their stocks that we own, the stocks they own at Euro Pacific Capital, have gone down with the U.S. stock market, and they therefore conclude that, oh my gosh, then if the U.S. stock market goes down to, you know, gets cut in half, then these stocks are going to go down just as much. Why do I own them? If they're going to do exactly what the U.S. stock market does, they're not going to. Just because they went down this time doesn't mean they're going to go down every time. And that's a mistake that people are making. You know, what happens in the short run has really little impact on what's ultimately going to happen. And ultimately, what is happening is very negative for the U.S. economy and the U.S. market, but very positive for the markets that we're investing in. In the short run, yes, there has been a positive correlation between U.S. stocks and foreign stocks. I am 100% confident that that correlation will reverse, and at some point it'll be an opposite. U.S. stocks down, foreign stocks up. That's what I think is ultimately going to be the bigger move. The same thing to happen in things like gold. I mean, right now, if you look at the price of gold, it tends to go down when the U.S. stock market goes down, and it tends to go up when the U.S. stock market goes up. Has it always been that way? No. Will it always be that way? No. It happens to be correlated positively right now, but that's not historically the way it is. It's normally a negative correlation. It's positive now, but it won't always be positive, just like it wasn't always negative, right? But I don't know exactly when that's going to change. Maybe it'll stop tomorrow. Maybe it'll start next month. I don't know. But I know it's coming. And you don't want to, you know, make long-term decisions or think that somehow rules have been changed just because things are acting a certain way right now. Remember, the majority of the people who are investing money around the world, who are in charge of large pools of capital, are completely clueless. Right, these are the same people who bought dot-com stocks in 1999 and 2000, the same people who bought all these subprime mortgages and mortgage-backed securities. Right? They've been losing money for their clients for years. They don't know what the hell they're doing. And these are the same people who are not buying gold, who think the U.S. economy is in good shape, and who are being forced to sell some of their foreign stocks to cover their margin calls. So it doesn't matter what's going on in the short run. We know how it's all going to play out in the long run. And as long as our investments are designed for that ultimate resolution, then we're in good shape. And we don't want to let the noise distract us from achieving our goals. And I feel very badly when I see a client who decides to sell some stocks because they've been scared or frightened based on what's happened in the market. And it saddens me because, you know, it's like I get somebody on a life raft, and I think I've got him saved, and then I turn around, and the next thing I know, he's jumped back onto the sinking ship for whatever reason. So hopefully that doesn't happen to anybody listening to this show, that you understand that, you know, you don't have a margin, you don't have to worry about margin calls. You know, I didn't have one client. We got, what, 7,000, 8,000 accounts? Nobody got a margin call. Number one, very few of my clients have margin as a percentage. I still probably have 5 or 10% of my accounts that use margin. But I use it responsibly. None of them got a call. Now, everybody knows I've got a lot of margin in my own account. I talk about it. I'm highly leveraged, and I've got a lot of gold stocks. And my stocks got clobbered. My gold stocks got clobbered in the last month. But I didn't even come close to getting a margin call because I am using margin in a responsible manner. But a lot of these hedge funds are levered up, you know, 5 and 10 times. I mean, it's a joke how much leverage they use. I mean, I lever my account up maybe 20 or 30%. So I make sure that I've got, you know, 75, 80% equity in my account, and then I borrow. I don't borrow to the extent that there's going to be any kind of risk of my getting a margin call. But that's not the case with a lot of these other leverage speculators. And so they had a lot of calls, margin calls, but we didn't. And so as long as my clients aren't forced to sell their stocks at inexpensive prices, we're fine. What bothers me is when they voluntarily decide to do that on their own, which is just, you know, it's like I can understand why somebody would sell a stock if they have no choice, and they have to because they get a margin call. But it's totally different to inflict the pain on yourselves, you know, by deciding that you're going to sell, even though there's no one forcing you to. It doesn't make any sense. You know, I bought a stock that I didn't own just, you know, the other day, like a week ago, that had been really gone down. And so I put some money into it. And I just happened to notice today that it's down another 7 or 8% since I bought it. Now, I know a lot of clients, the reaction to something like that is, oh, no, I screwed up. I bought it. No, my reaction was I put two more orders in to buy more stock at the price it is now. And I put another order in to buy it if it goes even lower. And, you know, One of the most important things that you have to understand as an investor is that assets that are cheap tend to get cheaper. That's just a fact of life. It's very difficult to buy something at the absolute bottom. But you don't have to buy it at the absolute bottom to be a good investor. You just have to buy it when it's cheap. And if you take a look at a stock and you can see what you're paying for it, right? You can see how much you're paying for the earnings. You can see what the dividend yield is. And if you can see a stock, you know, a stable company that has a very, very high yield for good reasons, and you're buying the asset cheap, and you're happy with the yield, then there's no reason not to buy it, and there's no reason to be upset if the stock goes down after you buy it. Because, I mean, the result is if you're just too afraid to invest in a stock because it might go down, then you're never going to buy a stock because stocks always might go down. And if you're never going to buy a stock, you're just going to stay in cash. And what kind of return are you going to get on cash over the long run? Not very good, especially if it's U.S. dollars. You're going to lose money because the interest you're going to get on cash is much lower than the rate of inflation. So you've got to be willing to put cash to work. You've got to be willing to turn cash into assets, but you've got to be willing to let the price of those assets go down. That's just the way it is. Now, of course, in the long run, if you're buying things cheap, the prices of the assets are going to go up. They're going to go way up. But they might not go up the day after you buy them. They might not go up the week after or the year after. I mean, believe me, there are stocks, and many of the clients who are listening to this show can probably call up, although not today, but maybe next week, can probably call up and talk about it. But some of the biggest winners that I have, stocks that I bought that my clients own that are 3, 4, 5, 10 times what they paid for them, in many cases, we had to wait 2 or 3 years before the stocks went up. Some of the stocks that I bought that are 5 and 10 times what people paid for them, I might have bought the stocks, let's say, in 1998, and then in 2000, the clients were down 20, 30, 40%. And then they went up 10 times. You don't know. I mean, sometimes something is cheap and you buy it and it stays cheap. It stays cheap for a while. But if you get a good dividend yield, what difference does it make? What difference does it make? And so if you buy something that's cheap and it gets cheaper, either buy more or don't worry about it, you know, because the price doesn't matter. And again, it works the same way on the way up. And I said the same thing to clients. You know, I was talking to prospects in 1998, 1999, who were very happy campers because the value of the internet and the technology stocks they had bought had gone way up. And my big sales pitch was, what I always try to tell people was, why are you happy? You haven't made anything. I said, have you sold any of your stocks? No. Are the stocks paying dividends? No. Well, then what did you make? Well, all they would say is, well, when the stock used to be 50 and now it's at 200. I said, well, what good is it that it's at 200? Are you selling it? No. Is it paying you a dividend? No. Fine. Then what good is it going to do you in a couple of years when the stock's at $10? And they would say, well, that can't happen. That's impossible. Well, that's exactly what happened. And all those phony gains, all those statements that they were getting, that they were so happy because the price was up, meant nothing. And it's the same thing. If you get a statement now and your account is down 10% from where it was, don't worry about it. It doesn't mean anything. No more than those phony statements meant anything in 1999. People thought they were making money. They weren't making anything. So if anybody thinks they're losing money because their account has a lower value than it did a month ago, don't worry about it. You know, we're doing the right thing. We've been doing the right thing for 10 years. During that time, there have been plenty of times where our stocks have gone down. And so far, anyone who's bought any of those dips has done very well. And anybody who was shaken out, and I've had clients. I had clients that were shaken out of their stocks in 1999 or 2000, 2001, 2002. I had a couple. Every once in a while, I run into someone in my Rolodex who is no longer a client, and I look at what they had and what they sold. And there are clients that literally got out of stocks with me, and I can see, oh, client sold this stock with a loss, and the stock is five times, you know, what they sold it for. I mean, there's some clients that I know, you know, they got scared because they bought a couple of stocks with me. They started, and they happened to get in at a bad time, and I bought them a couple of stocks, and they were down 10 or 20%, and they closed their account and went home. You know, it's really unfortunate. Because all those people, instead of closing their accounts, if they had just ridden it out, or if they had sent more money in, would be huge clients, because they would have spectacular returns. Anyway, let me take a quick commercial break, and I will be back for the last segment.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, and I am back. Anyway, and again, unfortunately, I wanted to remind I'm not taking any calls because the individual handling the phones does not quite understand how to do it. So when they go to take a phone call, they end up disconnecting me, and then I can't have a problem getting back into the phones. So just to at least keep me on the air, the easiest way to do it is not to take any calls at all. At least then I know that at least I'm on the air. But I apologize to Steve from California, to Jeff from California, to Calvin from North Carolina, anybody else who tried calling but who was not able to get through. Anyway, you know, this week you should receive in your emails a video presentation that I recorded last week, basically along the lines of this program and other programs about what's happening in the markets and why this is a great buying opportunity. And so when you get that video, definitely listen to it or watch it, and feel free to forward it to as many people as you can. You know, and the same goes with any of the stuff that you get in the mail from me or anything that you read or see. I mean, the key is to try to disperse this information to as wide an audience as possible so that we can try to, get as many Americans, in the right direction as we can. I mean, it's very important that Americans, at least some Americans, not go broke. And the only way they're going to do that is to get rid of their dollars before their dollars lose their value. And so I can help people do that, but I can't help people who don't at least take the first step to help themselves. They've got to get in touch with me. And so if we can disseminate some information, if you can get more people to read my book, the better. You know, I think the time is running out. I mean, I think we've reached, you know, the end of the game here. You know, and it's just amazing that so few people understand that the party, in fact, is over. But I think I can clearly see that the predictions that I've made are, in fact, coming true. Every time I hear something weird on the phone, I wonder if I'm still on. So I'm checking. Let's see. I guess there's someone calling in. What was I saying? Yeah, it's amazing that people just, you know, cannot appreciate what's going on. You know, the fact that it isn't 100% obvious to everybody that we're heading for a recession. I mean, I keep watching the commentators on the news shows talking about the fact that, well, there's no evidence that there's going to be a recession. You know, we need to wait for the data. You know, we need to wait to see the data. I mean, this is ridiculous. You need to wait to see the data? I mean, that's like you're standing on a train track. And, you know, and you can see that there's a light coming. And you're like, well, there's no evidence that light is attached to a train. I'm just going to stand here until I know for sure it's a train. Well, by the time you see the train, maybe it's too late to get off the tracks. You know, I mean, sometimes you just got to make a forecast, right? You just got to figure things out. You know, you got to, you know, connect the dots. And it seems obvious to anyone with a half a brain that we're going into recession. I mean, how could we not, right? I mean, I'm going to go over the statistics again. But our economy, the U.S. economy, is better than 70% consumer spending, right? Now, that's the highest percentage of consumer spending that our GDP has ever been at, is what it is right now. And we're spending much too much. I mean, you know, it's unprecedented. Now, what is it? How did consumers all of a sudden start to spend money? I mean, how did our GDP get to be so highly comprised of consumer spending? Well, it's easy. American consumers became rich. How did they become rich? Their houses, right, were magically increased in value, and Wall Street enabled homeowners to turn those paper gains into real consumption. Remember, in many parts of the country, over the last 7 or 8 years, home prices doubled and tripled. And people who were living in $200,000 homes suddenly were living in $600,000 and $700,000 homes. Now, these are people who maybe only earn $30,000 or $40,000 a year, $50,000 a year, and spend everything they make and had no savings. All of a sudden, Americans have hundreds of thousands of dollars, in some cases millions of dollars, to tap. I mean, I read stories about college students, right, who graduated college and bought condos, you know, with very little down payments or no down payments from their mother or their parents. And, you know, they bought a condo, and they paid $200,000 or $300,000, and all of a sudden, you know, it's worth $500,000 or $600,000. And now you have 24, 25-year-old kids with $200,000, $300,000 to spend. You know, they didn't. Where'd it come from? And so what Americans did is they went out and they spent money. They spent money on all sorts of things. You know, they remodeled their houses. They put in media rooms. They bought plasma TVs. They put granite on their countertops. They put jacuzzis in their bathrooms. They put in swimming pools. They bought plasma TVs and SUVs. They took vacations. They did all sorts of things. And they paid for it by borrowing money against their houses. And what made the loans manageable was adjustable rates and teaser rates and all sorts of phony things that were made possible by Wall Street and their securitization machine. Now, all that is ending, right? All the people who are lending Americans all this money are finding out that they're screwed, that we can't pay them back, and the whole thing is collapsing, right? And just the way I predicted it. And so what's going to happen is people are not going to be able to buy houses and condos with nothing down. People are not going to be able to buy condos with ARMs and negative AM loans. People are going to have to put 20% down. They're going to have to prove they can pay the mortgage, you know, in full, amortize it and pay it off. You know, they're going to have to document their ability to do so. They're going to have to prove they have jobs. They're going to have to prove they have assets. And, of course, when all this happens, right, we can't go back to normal lending standards without going back to normal prices. The only reason prices doubled and tripled is because of the existence of these phony lending standards. So we can't have lenders acting responsibly without prices collapsing. It's impossible to happen, right? I mean, it was prudent lending standards that kept prices anchored, right? Real estate prices in America for 100 years, they could not appreciate faster than incomes or people's ability to save for a down payment. Right. It was only when Wall Street created the securitization process where they separated all the risks of lending and they encouraged the speculation that temporarily housing prices got so out of whack. Now, of course, none of this would have been possible were it not for Alan Greenspan. So it's the government that got the whole thing started. They're really responsible, right? I mean, they're the ones that spiked the punch bowl. We can't necessarily blame Wall Street for serving it, because that's what would you expect them to do? But, this is the mess we're in. But now, when all this home equity goes away, because real estate prices are going to have to go back to where they were. I mean, my bet is that by 2009, U.S. Real estate prices in the United States will be lower than they were in 1999. Okay? All of the gains are going to go away. Right? All the home equity that people think they have is gone, right? But all the mortgage debt, we've accumulated a massive amount of mortgage debt. That's all still there. Now, of course, we're going to default on a lot of it. But, what we don't default on is still there. So Americans aren't going to have any assets. People who are, people are going to watch their entire wealth disappear. And the cost of living is going to rise if they still make their mortgage payments or if they have to pay rent. In many cases, the rents are going to be higher than what they used to pay on their teaser rates. They're going to have to pay more for food. They're going to have to pay more for energy. And they're going to have no net worth. They're going to have to start saving. So how can it be? How can an economy so dependent on consumption, and the consumption is so dependent on home equity and teaser rates, how can that economy not have a recession when the home equity is gone and the teaser rates are gone? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. It defies reason to believe that the economy won't have a recession. The only real argument right now should be, how bad is this recession going to be? That should be the argument. Now, I mean, the answer is it's going to be awful, right? But that's not even the debate. The debate is, well, are we going to have a recession or not? And I guess most people who think that there's going to be a recession, in their mind, they probably think, oh, maybe we'll have two quarters of slightly negative growth. Uh-uh. We're not going to have two quarters. We're going to have years. And it's not going to be slightly negative. It's going to be hugely negative. I mean, consumption basically is going to collapse in the United States. It has to. Now, there's going to be a lot of inflation, so it will make it hard to see the collapse. Because let's say I used to spend, let's say the average American, let's say I'm an American, I'm spending $1,000 a week. And let's say I used to spend $1,000 a week, and that $1,000 a week, maybe 30% of it was for food and gasoline, and the other 70% of it was for things that I like, other things like clothing or consumer electronics or leisure activities. And of course, that's not, I'm just making that up. But what's going to happen, let's say, is now fast forward a couple years, and I'm still spending $1,000, but 90% of it is going for food and energy, and only 10% of it is, because what's going to happen is more and more of what Americans spend is just going to be spent on the necessities of staying alive. That's going to be the falling standard of living that most of us who don't have accounts at Euro Pacific Capital are going to be forced to endure. And when you adjust our GDP for real inflation, it is going to completely collapse. And there's a guy that writes a newsletter. I forget the guy's name, Vardy, who's actually wrote a piece just recently making fun of me because he read a quote that I was interviewed by an Australian newspaper. And the story, the story is on my website. It was a really good story. I mean, better story than I usually get in the American press. But in that article, it included a misprint. And basically what I told the author was that, in my opinion, I said, right now the U.S., per capita GDP, we're about 6th or 7th in the world. Now, we used to be number 1 years ago. Now we're number 6 or number 7. But I said, in my estimation, in a couple of years, we'll be lucky if we're still in the top 20 in per capita GDP. And the way he reported that, he said, I don't think in the next couple of years America will be in the top 20 GDP as a nation. as a nation, which is absolutely ridiculous, because that would mean we had the per capita GDP of Afghanistan, according to this guy did the figures. But obviously that wasn't what I said. I mean, nobody would say something that stupid, but this guy, Vardy, wrote a whole piece about it, trying to discredit everything I've ever said because of this ridiculous statement that he thought I made. Okay, I made. He said, look at how ridiculous this guy is. This is what he actually believes. He's so over the top, he's so nutty, that he says crazy things. Now, if this guy Vardy, I mean, any sensible person who read something like that would call me up and say, hey, I read this. Did you really say this? Because it seems so absurd. To just verify it. But no, he was so anxious to discredit me. And of course, the interesting thing is, in his piece that he wrote about me, and he mentioned my book, you know, there are so many things in my book and things that I've predicted that have already come true. I mean, I have a very good record of predicting things before they happen. He didn't mention any of that. All he did is jump all over this ridiculous thing that he read, which was a misprint, of course, but he didn't bother to check it out. Of course, I've sent him several emails asking for a retraction, and I haven't heard one thing back from him. But my point is that our standard of living is going to fall. You know, and our GDP relative to, let's say, the euro or other currencies is going to be cut by more than 50%. It's going to be a dramatic decline in our GDP relative to other currencies. Maybe it'll come down 60 or 70% in terms of the euro. In terms of the dollar, maybe our GDP will decline by 20% over the span of 2 or 3 years. That's still huge. That's still huge. But that's what's got to happen. Because the consumption has got to end. What we have to start doing as a nation is saving. Now, eventually, more of our GDP is going to be comprised of exports, right? But it's going to take time, because we can't export stuff that we don't make. And we can't make stuff without factories. And we can't get factories without building them. And we need savings to finance it. So we really have dug ourselves into a tremendous hole. And it ain't going to be easy to dig our way out. Anyway, I know we're running out of time. Thanks for putting up with the problems this week. Hopefully we don't have them next week. Anyway, thanks for listening. Again, make sure to buy the book, Crash Proof, How to Profit from the Coming Economic Collapse. Make sure to call radio talk shows. I've mentioned this. You got to mention my book. You got to ask the host if they read my book. We've got to get the word out there. We've got to stimulate sales. We've got to let more people know that what's happening now is not coming out of left field, that it was predicted, and there were people who could predict it, and there are people who understand the problems, and there are solutions. But anyway, get that information out. Make sure to visit my website, www.europac.net. Sign up for the New Orleans Investment Conference, and look forward to receiving that email from me, the video message on the markets. Again, thanks for listening. If anyone needs to call, the toll-free number for my office is 800-727-7922, 800-727-7922. I'll be back again next week, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific, www.europac.net.